Welcome back, everybody. Today we're taking a deep dive into 1 Samuel chapter 7.
Okay.
It's a pretty amazing story of repentance and victory in the Old Testament.
Right.
And we'll be looking at it alongside some really interesting insights from Dr. Robert Chisholm's lectures on the books of Samuel.
Yeah, his work on this is just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he really brings the text to life, you know.
Absolutely.
So to kind of set the stage, we're picking up 20 years after the Ark of the Covenant was captured by the Philistines?
Yeah, that's right. Two whole decades.
Can you imagine living without that tangible symbol of God's presence for that long?
It's hard to even fathom the weight of that absence, you know?
Yeah, I mean, talk about a spiritual crisis.
Absolutely. And you really get the sense from 1 Samuel 7 that the Israelites are grappling with the consequences of their choices.
Mm-hmm.
The text tells us they are mourning and seeking the Lord.
Right.
Which suggests a deep sense of unease and a longing for restoration.
Yeah, like they finally realize they've messed up.
Exactly. And it's in this atmosphere of spiritual longing that Samuel reemerges.
Oh, yeah. Samuel, he's been kind of quiet for a while.
Right. He's been somewhat absent from the narrative, but now he steps back in to guide the people.
And he doesn't pull any punches, does he? He tells them straight up that true repentance requires more than just feeling sorry.
Oh, no. He's very clear about that.
It demands a complete turning away from those false gods and a wholehearted return to the Lord.
It's not about adding Yahweh to their collection of gods.
Oh.
It's about choosing him exclusively.
And it's interesting, the specific language he uses.
Oh, yeah.
He tells them to put away the foreign gods and the Ashtaroth from among you,
mm-hmm.
and to direct your hearts to the Lord and serve him only.
It's about a complete reorientation of their lives.
Yeah, their loyalties, their worship, their everything.
Exactly.
And the Israelites respond in a pretty dramatic way.
Oh, they do.
They get rid of their idols of Baal and Ashtoreth.
They literally discard these objects they had once revered.
I wonder what that must have been like.
Can you imagine the collective energy, the visual impact of a community coming together to do that?
It's a powerful statement.
It is.
Like they're making a clean break from their past.
Right.
Publicly declaring their commitment to Yahweh.
A way of externalizing an internal transformation.
Making their decision visible and tangible.
Exactly.
So then Samuel calls for a national assembly at Mizpah. Why Mizpah? What's the significance of that location?
Well, Mizpah was already a place with a lot of meaning for the Israelites.
Right.
It was where they had gathered in times of crisis in the past.
Hmm.
A place associated with seeking divine guidance and demonstrating unity.
So by choosing Mizpah, Samuel is intentionally drawing a connection to their shared history.
Yes, reminding them of who they are.
A people chosen by God.
And it sets the stage for a collective act of repentance.
And a renewed commitment to their covenant with Yahweh.
Absolutely.
And then we come to this curious ritual, the pouring of water before the Lord.
Right.
What do you make of that?
Well, that's a detail that has sparked a lot of debate among scholars.
I bet.
But one thing is for sure.
What's that?
It's a powerful image.
I can see it now.
This vast assembly of people united in their desperation, pouring out water before the Lord.
It's like they're trying to wash away their sins.
A physical manifestation of their inner thirst for forgiveness and cleansing.
Wow, that's a powerful image.
And it connects to this theme of spiritual cleansing that runs throughout the Old Testament.
Right.
Water becomes a symbol of purification.
Of washing away impurities and making a fresh start.
Exactly.
It's fascinating how these physical acts, these rituals, can be such powerful expressions of spiritual realities.
It's not just going through the motions.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
about engaging the heart and mind, embodying the inner transformation they are seeking.
So it's this outward display of repentance?
Yes.
Coupled with an inward turning to God.
A sincere desire for forgiveness and restoration.
That's what characterizes true repentance.
Precisely.
But as we're about to see, their act of repentance doesn't exactly make everything smooth sailing.
No, it doesn't.
In fact, it almost seems to invite trouble.
Yeah, you kind of get this sense of foreboding, right? Even before the Philistines show up, the Israelites are in this vulnerable state.
Repenting, fasting, seeking the Lord.
And then, bam, the text says the Philistines heard that the Israelites had gathered at Mizpah.
Oh, wow. So they know exactly where they are.
It's like a shadow falling over their moment of vulnerability.
It really does heighten the tension.
Yeah.
It's a real test of faith.
Absolutely. Are they turning to God just out of fear? Or is it genuine?
A good question for us, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we only turn to God when things are falling apart?
It's easy to be devout when we're in trouble.
What about when life is good?
That's when it takes real commitment.
So the Philistine army is on the move.
Yep, heading straight for Mizpah.
How do the Israelites react?
At first, fear, of course.
Makes sense.
But then they turn to Samuel.
Okay.
And they ask him to cry out to the Lord our God for us, that he may save us from the hand of the Philistines.
They're putting all their hope in divine intervention.
Their only hope, really.
And Samuel steps up right away.
Oh, yeah.
He offers a burnt offering and pleads with God on their behalf.
He doesn't hesitate.
This is where we see Samuel's true leadership.
He doesn't try to calm them with empty words.
He goes straight to the source.
To Yahweh.
And it's interesting how Samuel's role here, it kind of echoes other biblical figures.
Yeah.
Like who? Abraham and Moses, for example.
They also interceded with God on behalf of others.
It's like this idea that God chooses certain people to stand in the gap.
To represent the people before him.
And to plead for his mercy.
And in this case, Samuel's prayer is answered.
Oh, yeah. In a big way.
The Lord responds with a thunderous display of power.
A storm that throws the Philistine army into chaos.
Talk about divine intervention.
It's a scene that's both terrifying and awe-inspiring.
The Philistines came confident in their military might.
Mm.
But they're faced with a force beyond their control.
It's a reminder that even the strongest human armies.
Yeah.
Are no match for the power of God.
And think about where this victory takes place.
Oh, yeah. This isn't just any battlefield.
This is Ebenezer.
The same place where they lost the Ark of the Covenant.
The place of their defeat and despair.
And now it's a symbol of God's power and redemption.
It's like God is rewriting history.
And Samuel commemorates this moment.
Right. He sets up a stone memorial.
Another Ebenezer.
To mark the site of this victory.
So future generations won't forget.
It's a tangible reminder that God can turn things around.
That even when things seem impossible, he can bring victory and restoration.
There's another layer of symbolism here, too.
What's that?
Remember those idols the Israelites got rid of?
Baal and Ashtoreth.
The Canaanite gods.
Right. Baal, the storm god.
And the Lord secures his victory through a storm.
Wow. Through the very element associated with Baal.
It's a direct challenge to Baal's supposed power.
Like a cosmic showdown.
Yahweh versus Baal.
And Yahweh wins. It's a statement about the supremacy of the God of Israel.
Over all other gods.
Dr. Chisholm points out this pattern. This challenge to Baal worship that runs through Judges and Samuel.
We see it with Deborah and Barak, too.
Right. The flood that disrupts Sisera's chariots.
And Gideon's fleece test.
Challenging Baal's control over the dew.
It's about dismantling this whole belief system.
That attributes power to false gods.
Reclaiming the narrative.
Asserting the sovereignty of Yahweh.
Over all creation.
But even with this incredible victory, it's an amazing demonstration of God's faithfulness.
There's still this sense of uneasiness.
Like this is just one chapter.
In a much larger story.
A story that's still unfolding. Kind of ironic, isn't it?
What's that?
They experience this incredible victory.
Yeah.
This like undeniable proof of God's power and faithfulness.
Right.
But then in the very next chapter, their commitment to Yahweh just evaporates.
Yeah. Doesn't last very long, does it?
It really makes you wonder.
About what?
How deep their repentance actually went.
Hmm.
Were they just looking for a change in circumstances?
Instead of a real heart change.
Maybe.
It's a good reminder, though.
Of what?
That human nature is fickle.
Even after experiencing God's grace.
Even after miracles.
We see this over and over in the Bible.
People experience God's intervention.
They pledge their devotion.
And then they fall right back into old patterns.
It's like the memory of God's deliverance.
Yeah.
Fades away so quickly.
And in this case, they decide to demand a king.
Rejecting Samuel's leadership.
And in a way, rejecting God's direct rule.
It's strange, isn't it?
What is?
They just witnessed God's power firsthand.
Right.
But they still want a human king.
Someone they can see.
Someone who can give them a sense of control.
It's like they're looking for security and stability.
In a world that feels chaotic.
Exactly.
Dr. Chisholm makes a good point about this.
What's that?
The difference between outward conformity.
And inward transformation.
True repentance goes deeper than just doing the right things.
Deeper than getting rid of idols or making promises.
It requires a change in how we see God.
And how we understand our relationship with him.
It's a journey. It's ups and downs.
Moments of great faith.
And times of doubt and rebellion.
Just like the Israelites.
We struggle to stay faithful.
Especially when things get tough.
Or when we're tempted by the things of the world.
It's comforting, though.
But it is.
That even those who saw God's miracles still had their doubts.
It makes our own struggles seem a little less overwhelming.
Maybe that's part of the message here.
And at Source Samuel 7.
That repentance is a process.
It's not a one-time thing.
It's about constantly turning back to God.
Reaffirming our commitment.
Even when we mess up.
We need those Ebenezer stones in our own lives.
Those reminders of God's faithfulness.
To help us stay grounded.
When our faith is weak.
It all comes down to trust.
The trust in God.
A trust that helps us through the storms.
And gives us peace in the midst of uncertainty.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I keep thinking about those false gods in our own lives.
The things that promise us happiness.
But end up leaving us empty.
Maybe if we can identify those things.
And let them go.
We can experience true repentance.
Turn our hearts toward God.
And find His grace and forgiveness.
It's never too late to turn back to God.
He's always waiting.
Ready to give us a fresh start.
And the promise of victory in the midst of our struggles.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.